Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Need expert advice on your family's health? Speak to us today at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Now, sitting across from me, actor and singer Phelim Drew, who's going to give us a taste of the music that has soundtracked a number of special moments in his life. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
Thank you very much for coming in. I would say you're sitting down there and looking at me and saying, how long is it going to be before this fella mentions me, Dad?
Well, I mean, that's natural, isn't it, you know?
So we do the Da stuff and get that out of the way first.
Sure, it's all part of the story, isn't it, you know?
Well, it is, but I think one of the things that sort of surprises me geographically about your life now is that you grew up with Ronnie Drew, not in the Liberties in Dublin City Centre, but in Greystones. And you now live, don't you, in the Tenters? In the
I do, center. Yeah, yeah. So mum and dad lived in Bagot, just off Bagot Street, and I was born in town, and we lived for the first few years in Dublin. And then my mother was from Greystones, and we moved out there and just stayed out there, you know. But it was a very different place then than it is now.
And what was that house like? Was it full of music?
It was, I think, yeah, it was a beautiful house. It was on a terrace just up from the railway station, and there was a constant flow of people coming through the house, you know, not all musicians. My parents were, they were very hospitable, you know, and they loved a party.
How indulgent or how tolerant was your father of your taste in music and your sister's taste?
Not indulgent or tolerant at all. Yeah, no, it's funny. I remember as a child, you know, the radio was on in the house constantly, you know, and, you know, when I heard the Angelus there at 12 o'clock, you know, it brought me out in a rash because, you know, the music on the radio back then, you know, a lot of it was great, but some of it was very grey. And when you heard the Angelus, it was like, you know, when I hear it today, it brings back PTSD. You know, I want to run to the radio and turn it off before it plunges me into a depression.
Well, I was going to say, you're of the Radio Caroline generation or Radio Nova, Radio Sunshine?
I suppose Nova, yeah. And I remember as a teenager, I loved Jerry Ryan. Jerry was on quite late in the evening, and he used to play great music.
Yeah. Your dad, I gather, banned Top of the Pops in your house when he came back from tour.
Yeah, he just wasn't very tolerant of anything being on that, you know. He kind of took over the telly when he came home. And, you know, while I always loved my dad coming home and, you know, we would spend a lot of quality time together going for drives and that sort of thing. And he would tell me stories about, you know, on the road and that sort of thing. But it was always a slight sense of relief when he went as well because, you know, you get the telly back and you could watch
the old grey whistle test. Is that what you're trying to say?
The Top of the Pops.
Were you aware of his fame and what it was that he did? Or rather, I mean, I know you said you knew what he did and so on, but how big, good an appreciation did you have?
I was aware from a very early age and, you know, I suppose going to concerts from a very early age. I remember going to the stadium as a very young child and, you know, the atmosphere of smoke in the air. And every Dubliners concert was an occasion. There was an electric atmosphere because they were five individuals who could have been very successful on their own, and together it was incredible.
I know, but even back then, whatever about now, your dad was an iconic kind of figure. Did you appreciate that? That's how people saw him.
Not really, no. I mean, I just kind of took it for granted that everybody knew who he was, and he seemed to know everybody personally. Yeah. So I do remember, you know, there's odd occasions where, you know, people would say, how are you, Ronnie? And, you know, but I do remember on one occasion there was a woman came up to him and said, Ronnie, I just want to say thanks for all the years of entertainment. And I thought that was beautiful, you know.
And was being Ronnie Drew's son something that, because you had a great interest in music yourself, you had musical talent yourself, But you seem to have suppressed that until later in life and pursued acting initially. Was that conscious?
Not really at the beginning. I remember going to see plays at the Abbey with my mother. My mother had worked at the Pike Theatre, which was quite radical in the 50s and on into the 60s, and she kind of instilled a love of the theatre in me, an appreciation. Okay. and I joined a local profit share company in when I was about 16, and to see if it was something that I'd be interested in.
So it was more about being influenced by mum than running away from dad.
Yeah, absolutely. And I caught the bug. But the really, you know, the benefit of being in a play is that you're part of an ensemble and nobody is particularly, you know, watching you or you know, okay. you can be part of the company. So you're not responsible if it doesn't work out.
Your first choice of music is surprising. Indeed, all of your choices of music, I think, are quite surprising. But there is a link back to family again and a story involving your dad that explains why you've chosen UB40.
Yeah, well, I mean, the brief was, you know, music that triggers memories. Yeah. And, you know, when I was growing up, I don't remember consciously sitting down to listen to Planxty, De Donnan, The Chieftains. But I'm so familiar with all that music because it was all around me at home, on the radio, and at concerts.
So it's not going to trigger a specific memory?
I do love Irish traditional music, but I think as you get, as I came to about 12 years of age, I started to love and obsess about rock and roll, you know, Little Richard, Chuck Berry, Elvis, and then I started to look at, you know, what was current. And, you know, if I think back, I think about music that I really liked, but I would never admit to liking, like disco maybe, or ABBA, Supertramp, Barry White. I wouldn't admit to liking those when I was younger, but...
God, these are nothing if not eclectic, from Supertramp to Barry White.
You know, great tracks, great music.
Okay, but UB40 and Ian Campbell of the two boys.
Yeah, well, I discovered UB40, and Food for Thought is a great song, and I followed them right through Labour of Love, and then I was amazed and delighted to find out that Ian Campbell, folk singer, father of Ali and Robin Campbell, was coming to visit the house to see my father, and I was delighted, and I couldn't wait to meet him. And when I asked him about the lads, he just said, "Oh, those boys." Ali says, "You can't understand a word he says. His diction is terrible." But I loved I love UB40. I think they're there's two factions going around the place, but they're both great.
UB40, Food for Thought. So back then, when Ian Campbell came to the house, were you in bands yourself? Were you playing around with instruments?
No, I was still very young. I was about 13 or something at the time. I started playing the guitar when I was about 14, and I had the guitar that was my father bought for me, which Eamon Campbell picked out for me, was a tack of mine. And it's an EN10. I think Glenn Hansard plays one, and so does Christy. But it's a fabulous guitar, and I play it to this day.
Did you show immediate talent for it, or was there hard work and application went into it?
No. It's not something that comes naturally to me. I could work harder at it, and I have done. You know, I'm very fortunate to play with wonderful guitar players who come in and really...
Very smart. You know. Surround yourself with good people and you'll always look good, won't you?
Anto Drennan is playing, at the moment. I'm very lucky to play with Anto, and I've played with Jer Kiley and, some really great musicians.
Now, your next choice of music, there is a link back to the Campbell brothers and indeed your father as well, isn't there?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Dad had a lot of friends that he knew from Scotland and England from the 60s, from the folk clubs. And the next choice of music is a song called The Old Man's Tale. And I was looking back at it and I was wrong, because I thought it was from an album called Guaranteed Ronnie Drew, which was a favourite album of mine, and which Eamon Campbell produced. But this was from an album called Together Again, which was the last studio album that Luke appeared on. And it's one of my favourite recordings of favourite songs that I used to enjoy hearing my dad sing. And it's so poignant. And he really came into his own when it came to singing songs like that.
At the turning of the century, I was a boy of 5. Me father went to fight the Boers, and he never came back alive. All me mother was left to bring us up, and no charity she'd seek. So she washed and scrubbed and scraped along on 7 and 6 a week. When I was 12, I left the school, and I went to find a job. And with growing kids, me ma was glad of the extra couple of bob. I'm sure that longer schooling would have stood me in good stead. But you can't afford refinements when you're struggling for your bread.
Strong sense of storytelling in that song. Is the actor in you drawn to songs with that strong narrative?
Definitely. And I think, my experience as an actor helps me to appreciate the writing. And, it's always easier to put across fine writing. And that song is beautifully written. And I was just, while that was playing there, I remember I was saying to you about Eamon Campbell. I think he helped Robin Campbell and Eamon Campbell, or Ali Campbell, write Food for Thought, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Dad was a great storyteller. And he was really interested in the oral tradition, and I enjoy that when I'm working on a song.
Your earlier creative outlets, of course, were in acting, and your face will be familiar from so many films in that period of the late 80s into the 90s, which I now consider something of a kind of a golden age of Irish cinema, because we were making films in Ireland with Irish actors, using Irish stories, going out on the world stage, obviously, but they were very Irish in content. Now we tend to see a film industry that's using the country as a sort of a pretty backdrop. Were you conscious at that time that this was something of a golden age, or renaissance even, of Irish cinema?
Not at all, no. I mean, I disagree with you about, because there's so many wonderful films coming out of Ireland now. We're blessed. And there will always be, films that want to use Ireland as a backdrop. The sort of John Hine factor, I suppose you'd call it.
But there are an awful lot of the time pretending that it's not Ireland, that it's Scandinavia for
whatever else.
But just go back to that period of, the commitments which you were in, My Left Foot. Help me out here, because there's just
I started off with I got a job as a special extra on My Left Foot, so I was very much in the background, but it was a great privilege because I was able to observe people like Ray McAnally, Brenda Fricker, and of course Daniel Day-Lewis at work, and Jim Sheridan really gave it gave everybody their own responsibility on that film, and it was extraordinary to see it reach such
you
success.
Were there watching that, and then you see Daniel Day-Lewis accepting an Oscar for it.
Yeah,
that must
and
have been
Brenda
heady.
And Brenda won a Best Actress Oscar for it, I think, or Best Supporting
Excuse
Actress.
Excuse me, Brenda Fricker, for getting your Oscar as well. Yeah.
And that led to appearances in The Commitments. Everybody was in The Commitments. I was hanging around with a great guitarist, Sean Foy. Uh-huh. We used to go to the Box Club in Whelan's and Brussels. And
you were in Into the West as well, a film which I recently unveiled to my kids, and my God, it holds up. They were absolutely entranced by
it. Yeah, it's a lovely film. Yeah, Brendan Gleeson is in that, and Rory Conroy, and I'd only had a small scene in it. Mike Newell, I think, directed that, as far as I can remember, and great times.
You weren't to know at the time, I suppose, that it was going to be such a fertile period, were you? But it definitely, in hindsight, appears as such, doesn't it?
That's it, I just enjoyed it at the time. And around that time, I was always playing in bands, I've always been very modest about my ability as a singer, as a musician. And it's really only in the last few years, I suppose a little bit by necessity, because a lot of the acting work that I would have been used to has kind of fallen away. So I've been exploring my toolbox, as it were, and playing more music and loving it.
Did it in any way coincide with meeting your wife, Sue Collins, who would have been, at the time that you met, I think she would have been one third of the Nulas?
Yeah, when we met first, we met in my local Fallon's on the Coombe, and she was doing a run of shows at the Tivoli, and I met her through two friends, Conor Linehan, the pianist and composer, and the wonderful Susanna Derrickson, what an incredible actress and singer. And I met Sue, and we kind of, that ignited the spark that turned into a family of six.
And Steve Earle isn't one of your music choices, but played a very significant role in that romance.
Yeah, it's hard to pick, five songs. And I love Steve Earle, and brought Sue, I think it was our second date. Our first date, she was accompanied by her friend Carol. And I remember we went to Nico's on Dame Street, and I nearly choked on my stracciatella soup because Carol kept using these mixed metaphors. Saying things like a rolling stone gathers no hay, and it's no skin off my hair, and all that kind of stuff. It was hilarious. So the next date, we went to Steve Earle in the Olympia. It was Steve Earle and the Del McCorry band, and it was theatrical because they stood around one microphone in the middle of the stage and all moved in and out according to who was taking the lead, the vocal or the instruments, and it was just spectacular.
And Sue was wowed by that, and you got to bask in the reflected glory of it?
A little bit, yeah. I think I was trying to show off a little bit about my taste in music, but luckily she agreed and she enjoyed it. We got married and we did a couple of children, and our first child, we moved out to my parents for 6 months.
Now, perversely, we're not going to play Steve Earle. Your next choice is Joe Jackson, I'm the Man. Why is that?
I think Joe Jackson, I'm the Man. Well, it was my brother-in-law who lent me that album, and I loved it. So that would have been way back in the mid-80s. But I love the song and this recording, because it's really sophisticated, and yet it's very vibrant. It's full of energy. It's reminiscent of Elvis Costello and the punk of the late 70s.
Were you drawn to that kind of late 80s English anti-Thatcherite, angry political kind of music?
Oh, yeah. Billy Bragg and people like that. Fantastic. Yeah, I was, and I still, I heard a song, you know, Arctic Monkeys, their first sort of hit song on the radio yesterday, and I loved it. I think
music with a bit of bite, a bit of
edge. Absolutely, yeah, but it's rock and roll, I suppose, when it comes down to it, you know. And it's reminiscent of that kind of, you know, late 80s or mid 80s, that feeling of going around with brothel creepers on and your hair slicked back. I went through a kind of when I got out of my two-tone phase, I got into a sort of a rockabilly phase, and, you know, I thought it was the dog's bollocks going around, you know, with you know, Sean and all those, that crowd in
was
the
early
90s.
Was there ever a shoe less suited to Irish climatic conditions than brothel creepers? Let's just press on with your next choice, David Lindley, Mercury Blues. Why is that?
It's because it's just such a fantastic recording, and I'm a bit of a blues nerd. Along the way, I've discovered all kinds of music, but I love blues. You know, Muddy Waters would be a favourite of mine, and, you know, right through John Lee Hooker, Etta James, and Robert Cray. For the last few years, I've been playing with a wonderful guitarist, Jer Kiley, and he introduced me to this song. Most of the songs that, you know, most of the music that I've really got into, you know, it's other people who have steered me down that road, you know, and I'm really grateful to them for it.
David Lindley, Mercury Blues. David Lindley, Mercury Blues. Never make your hobby your business, which, as you say, you've kind of had to do out of necessity.
Rubbish.
It's working out for you.
Absolutely, absolutely. I don't know. I mean, I'm not out there to move anybody with my music. Leave that to, you know, Mick Flannery and Lisa Hannigan, you know, who are absolutely brilliant. But, I like to entertain. And I'm going to be playing in the Harbour Bar on the 20th of April.
In Bray?
All my dates are on phelimdrew.com. And my wife is flying with Dirtbirds. They're going to be doing a tour this year, culminating in a set of shows at the Olympia. And you can see their dates on dirtbirds.net.
And is it folk that you're playing with Anto Dreadnought?
I play a mixture of... It's quite eclectic. It's like my taste in music. I think it's nice to kind of mix it up with an audience. And I like to tell a few... ramble about, you know, observations and share jokes and things like that, you know.
Oh, okay. So there's the Harbour Bar on the 20th, the Viking Theatre in Clontarf.
On the 29th of May to the 1st of June, and then Arthur's Pub on the 7th of June, and then Clears, I'm starting a run of shows called Remembering Ronnie Through Songs and Stories.
And to underline the point about how eclectic your music choice is, the last piece is Lisa Hannigan singing Leonard Cohen.
Mm.
Why is that?
Well, I was lucky enough to be invited by a man called Brian Connor, to whom I'm absolutely indebted. He's an incredible musician and a beautiful man. And he brought me in to do this Leonard Cohen tribute with the RTE Concert Orchestra. And we did it first at the All Together Now Festival and then Bord Gáis. And it was just a life-changing experience for me. Good. I really enjoyed it. And for me, that song was the standout. And it is extremely moving.
I've really enjoyed talking to you. And thank you so much,
Philip, for your insights. Thank you.
Lisa Hannigan singing If It Be Your Will.